Hello and welcome to Disney Magic Hour, episode number 68. On this week's episode, we put Pixar Studios up against Walt Disney Animation Studios. To my left, as always, is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
Joining us via Skype is Brian. Say hello, Brian.
Hello, Brian.
And back on the show after a small sabbatical is Ryan Wilson. Say hello, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. And that was Upular. You can find that track and more from Pogo over at soundcloud.com/PogoMix. And his website is PogoMix.net. This episode of Disney Magic Hour is brought to you by MEI Travel for all your vacation planning needs. For visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, traveling anywhere around the globe, visit the experts over at MEITravel.com, where Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. Maybe you head on out to California, visit Pixar Studios, and not get arrested. It's part of the... It's key to the whole experience. Who are we, though? We are lastgenpodcast.com. That's lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter for this show at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That is D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. Over on Facebook, search for Disney Magic Hour. Add yourself to the group. We're available on iTunes, Google Music Play, and all of our episodes are streamable across your devices. SoundCloud.com/Disney Magic Hour Podcast. Melissa, where can everyone find us over at the Graham Della Insta?
Instagram is at Disney Magic Hour Podcast.
And Ryan, where can everyone find you and everything that you do over at Main Street Gazette?
So the site is mainstgazette.com. If you search Main ST Gazette on Instagram or Twitter, we'll be there. And on Facebook, just search for Main Street Gazette, and you can find all of the stuff up here.
And Brian, where can people find you just in general? Like
on Long Island.
All right, good.
So. Except in, I'll be in Disney the next week.
Yes, so you will.
You can find me there. Yes.
What time? You flying out tomorrow morning, yeah? Early?
6:15.
Nice. So yeah. We'll see you around like 1, 2 o'clock-ish probably.
Yeah,
in the parks.
I'm thinking about 1 o'clock or so. I should get to the parks because I'll get there, get something to eat, and you know, hopefully the room is ready and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Did you see my quick story on – I posted a little quick thing on the group page today.
I did.
I completely forgot to book Magical Express. So I never – I didn't get my luggage tags the beginning of last week. I still hadn't gotten them, so I called and they're like, you don't have a Magical Express booked. I said, do I have it from March? And they said, yeah. I said, crap, I must have booked the March trip and not booked the other one. So whatever, they told me they could still do it and just, you know, that, but I wouldn't get the tags. So when I get to the airport, I got to give them my checked bag thing or whatever. And I was like, oh, that sounds kind of sketchy. I don't know, whatever. I that stinks. And she's like, hold on a second. She goes and she tells them, she said, they're going to print them right now and they're going to put them, you know, they're going to rush them out. But she's, I'm not sure you're going to get them. So I did. I was like, oh, I'm not going to get them. I came home today and an express package from UPS with my luggage tags in it.
Oh, that's great, man.
Yeah, so they saved me from my own stupidity. So
yes, which is infinite and nonstop.
Yeah, they have no idea the depths that my stupidity goes. Mm. But, yeah.
They'll learn. That's good though. That's cool that they were able to get that up and running for you so fast.
Yeah, so that was cool. I thought that was nice of her. She didn't have to do that. She could have just been like, "You're an idiot."
Yeah, well,
the other way.
You didn't rent a car, so you're an idiot. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, just,
I know. We've had this convo.
We've had this.
Now I don't have to rent a car anymore.
They have those fancy new buses. I'll be sitting pretty.
Yeah, those buses that we saw, the Sorcerer class buses that we saw over at D23's Destination D last week was good. If you guys didn't listen to last week's show with John Panda, it was really fun. Panda's a pretty awesome dude, and I'm actually hoping to meet up with him this week. While Brian is visiting, we're hoping to meet up somewhere in the parks, so that'll be a lot of fun. Ryan, where have you been?
Where haven't I been? No, it's just been a couple of crazy weeks. I was in Colorado for about a week with a work conference and here, there, and everywhere, and I'm finally back. That's not true. I'm going someplace in a week and a half, but that's okay. For right now, I'm home, and I'm here, and I'm happy to be here.
All right, cool. Yeah, we've missed you. But we also – I don't think we've actually done one of our traditional movie things since you haven't been here because I don't know why. I feel weird doing them without you. But we, it was also great because we had a lot of stuff that we had to do outside of those.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, D23 kind of took us.
That and Moana.
And Moana,
you know, like that was a very busy week and all that kind of good stuff. So it's good.
I think there was even Halloween Horror Night still thrown in there when we were still trying.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, you're right. Yeah, that's right. Wow, that was a while.
It's been a while.
That was a while. That was a month ago, yeah. I guess that was a month ago because it's now the 29th of November.
Yeah, December's around the corner.
So let's get into some park news first, theme park news. This is not Disney related, but I feel like all these news is sort of Disney related because I'm always curious to see how Disney reacts to this stuff and what their plans are. I mean, obviously we know Star Wars Land is on its way, Pandora's next year, Toy Story Land is in there as well, kind of a question mark over exactly when. We've heard next year, you know, we've heard parts, 2018. Seems to be popping up a lot for Toy Story.
And then we even got the Epcot's getting a redo.
Epcot's getting this. So to kind of expand on a previous announcement, Universal Studios and Nintendo, they had previously said, hey, we're doing stuff and it's going to be in Japan. And there was really no mention towards the U.S., which I get it. I mean, I guess you want to test it in Japan, but guess what? There's no testing to be done for a Nintendo Land in Japan. People are going to burn each other to try to get there, you know, before everyone else. It's going to be massive. So today, Universal and Nintendo released a video featuring Miyamoto, who is the creator of Mario, and Universal Creative's Mark Woodbury doing his best Bob Iger impersonation. I've never seen this dude on camera before, and I was like, wow, they all like breed them in the same, like the same lab, like they all have the same manner of speaking, and it's kind of like
they all come off the same assembly line.
Yeah, like I'm dressed, but I'm kind of casually like business dressed, you know, because I'm one of you. You're not one of us. It's okay though. That's why you're good at your job, because you're not one of us. Because if you're one of us, you would suck at your job because we're pretty dumb. So.
Wow. Speak for yourself.
All right. I do speak for myself. So they released a really cool video. Mario popped out of the green
pipe.
Sewer tube, the pipes, much like he did at the closing of this year's Olympics. And they basically, the big news was Nintendo is going to be coming to Orlando and Hollywood, Universal Studios parks. They didn't get into any specifics beyond that, because they also only focused on Mario as a featured component. They were even standing in front of mock setups that you can imagine will be what you walk through. You know, they had the ice world and, you know, the regular green world in the background. And that was pretty much all they said. It was just a bunch of, you know, vague, this is going to be fun stuff. But officially now it is coming over there. So I just kind of wanted to go around the virtual table here and, okay, Mario's going to be there, so you know it's going to be there. And I almost feel like Mario Kart's the easiest answer, so let's just put Mario Kart to the side.
Aww.
But because it's the most obvious thing. Like,
do you remember when I played Mario Kart so much on my DS on the plane ride that I got an imprint of the button in my thumb?
On your thumb, yeah. Fine. Ellie, well, it was to Italy, right?
No, I don't know.
I think it was Italy. It was a long flight. So, going around, actually, we'll start with Melissa. What Nintendo game, if you have one? Yeah, I know you play games, but you're not a huge gamer. Is there a Nintendo property you want to see featured in Nintendo Landing?
I don't know. I only really played Nintendo 64 a lot and some Dreamcast stuff. So a lot of the newer stuff I don't really know. And a lot of the older stuff I don't really know either. So for me, like a Mario 64 type world would be really cool.
I think you're definitely getting that.
Yeah, well, that's what the sets they look like they were sitting in front of look like. But I wouldn't be opposed to something with Zelda. That would be cool.
I think Zelda's the other like very obvious one, but they also hadn't said anything, which is kind of surprising. Brian, you know, what would you want to see in a Nintendo Land?
Honestly, I want to see I would want a Super Mario Land. That's what I would want.
But beyond that, this was more of a Nintendo thing, like an overarching Nintendo thing. It wasn't just Super Mario Land. What else would you want represented?
Zelda and maybe
Duck Hunt.
No, that would be awesome.
Only the best.
I'm trying to think of anything else that I would really that would translate well. And that's even like relevant with them. See, the thing is, all of their games, they have a lot of games, they all feature Mario in some way in that universe, for the most part, some way other than Zelda. What is that other game, Pikmin? I could see them doing something with that. That's pretty big, and I think that's a Nintendo exclusive.
I feel like they're similar to Minions. Not like popularity, so but like that little dumb thing.
Yeah.
I don't know how big that is, but a Pikmin type thing could be cool, because that's got some interesting visuals to it. Donkey Kong, of course, I think should be part of it, like Donkey Kong, Diddy Kong, that sort of stuff. I wouldn't mind seeing that, like a Donkey Kong Country area. That's pretty cool.
Ryan, what about you? Is there anything sort of at the top of your wish list outside of Mario?
I mean, they have to stick with stuff that people know and is easily recognizable to the general masses. So, yeah, we're looking at Mario. I'd love to see something Zelda. I think if you're going to try to tailor it for even a younger set, maybe you put something Kirby in there for, the little kids to play with. But, you know, yeah, the Donkey Kong, the Zelda, the Mario, I think that kind of is your market to hold to.
And Yoshi also is pretty. Kind of big, yeah.
Yeah, I guess they're going to float all the way sort of in that area. I don't know. I don't know what you do for a whole thing. Or if it's just, I mean, they call it Nintendo. They're not saying it's Super Mario Land. So that makes me think it's definitely going to stretch beyond just the realm of Mario, where, I mean, Metroid would be incredible. That would be a lot of fun. But I think Zelda and Mario should be your two tops. With obvious reasons.
Castlevania in there. Let's just do Castlevania.
But see, the thing is, Castlevania, and I don't think
that's Konami.
I'm not positive with Metroid, but I know Castlevania is Konami, or was Konami, so I know that's not Nintendo.
Yeah, actually, who owns Metroid nowadays?
I'm not positive if Metroid is Nintendo. I think it is, but I'm not 100% positive.
According to Wiki,
oh no,
it
publishers,
is.
It is Nintendo.
Yeah,
it is. Okay, that I wasn't sure of. I just wasn't. But that's been, honestly, that's so much out of like the public conscience in terms of Nintendo games.
They never release games for Metroid. And when they do, they're really dumb ideas that no one wants.
Yeah. Yep.
Which is kind of frustrating, because I liked Metroid Prime a lot, even though that game constantly froze up on me due to bugs. And you had to go back and do 2 hours worth of work again because of the old school save systems that I do not miss those. but I would like to see a Metroid thing. And I think that, I mean, what else is Konami doing? I mean, whatever. Pony up some cash. I'm sure they can get a couple of Konami things in there.
Well, I mean, the other big obvious one would be if they do a Pokemon thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Nintendo, while they don't publish, they're not their games publisher. I know that they have a lot of money staked into Pokemon.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess that would be, oh, man. I almost don't want to see that.
I almost don't either, but...
Oh yeah, no, it makes a ton of sense. You're totally right.
I liked Pokemon when I was little, like the original one, the show and stuff was really cool. So I mean, like if they did like a retro thing, it would be kind of fun.
Yeah, see, with Pokemon, Nintendo is the sole owner of the trademark, but the company itself, the franchise itself, is owned by the Pokemon Company, which is basically Nintendo, Game Freak, and Creatures, three different companies. All basically have a stake in the Pokemon. So they would all have to agree on something. But, I mean, since when has Pokemon, that franchise, been like, oh, no, 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 we can't put this on everything possible. So
we don't want to make any more money.
Yeah, like we've reached the tap limit on making 7 games out of one title. So I'm sure that they're going to do a lot of stuff. The bigger question is, where is it going to go? I had read an article today where they were, you know, someone was... you know, saying Hollywood in Hollywood Studios, Universal Studios itself, where Woody Woodpecker and all that kind of stuff is, like, you can pretty much trash that area and start right there. And that's a large swatch of land, possibly engulfing E.T. as well. They also then made a comment about how, like, Spielberg would block anything to E.T. I don't think Spielberg is saying that, but being recently on E.T. twice, I love E.T. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. That ride has not aged well. It hasn't aged well. So, but that whole area can gleefully be knocked down for a Nintendo Land, and that's a lot of space. Because after seeing Fantastic Beasts and where they... And how to... What?
Where to find them?
I would love to see the Lost Continent knocked down and get myself a magical New York, which is, I said that first, you thief.
Melissa. I put it in writing.
You're such a thief.
Mine.
I would really love to see that. So I hope that they don't try to squeeze in a Nintendo thing and that small little piece of the pie in Islands of Adventure. I think there's much more. Like, who's going to see that Animal Actors thing anymore? No one. Only insane people. So knock that over and let's go with that. But obviously, more on that in the future, in the future. Melissa, do you want to talk about what they announced this week for a new dining experience over at the Disney World Resort?
Yeah, they have basically taken everyone's informal idea of a monorail crawl and pumped it up a bit. And they're calling it Highway in the Sky Dine Around.
Great name.
Yeah, it's...
That's sarcasm.
It's definitely going to get shortened by many people. But basically, you start at the Contemporary, you start at the Wave, and you go, you get your cocktail, you go on the monorail, you go to the Polynesian, you get a little something there too, a little something to eat, a little more drinks. The way they were phrasing it, I was hoping that it would be maybe a stop at Sam's or something. That would be cool. And then you go back on the monorail, you go to Grand Floridian Resort, and you go to Citra Coast, which is a really nice restaurant. So I really thought that was a nice way to kind of end there. And you get, you know, your entree, you get wine pairing, and then you go back on the monorail to the Contemporary, where you get to watch the fireworks over Cinderella's Castle, and you get dessert, cordials, and coffee.
And this is all going to be starting up on Sunday, December 2nd. So, you know, right around the corner, this was a very like, hey, this is happening Friday. In, you know, 3 days. Oh, yeah, my days are all messed up. Friday, December 2nd. And the reservations open on the 29th, which is actually right now. It's a cost of $150, gratuity included. This is per person. Taxes additional. So throw on like another $10 or so. Valet parking is included. And, of course, you know, reservations 407 WDW Wine.
Dine.
Man.
Dine wow. And wine.
Words.
Wine and dine.
I don't know. This seems fine. Citra Coast is a pretty pricey dinner. You could go about, I mean, what would you spend there? Like $50-$60?
I was looking at the entrees, and most of the entrees were priced between $36 and $48. So, okay, so that was entree alone.
Let's assume you get at least an appetizer or dessert with dinner, okay? One or the other.
Yeah.
We can round about to say that's about a $60 value.
That's probably not including a glass of wine either.
Good point. The valet is, what is it now,
30? 25.
25?
I believe, yeah.
I mean, granted, if you're splitting it between people, but like that's another, you know, that's another value right there. And
dessert parties are usually about like $60 to $80.
Yeah, so I think like, if you cobble all this together, it's kind of not a bad deal. I mean, $150 a person, obviously, that's a steep number. It's not for everybody. It's not for, I wouldn't think, many families. But I think for what they're offering, it's good. But this seems like another offer that is aimed at a specific financial realm where all of the offerings seem to be like, hey, this is going to cost you a lot of money. And if unless you're looking to, you know, do a lot of money, you're just going to the parks. Like there's, you know, it's hard to find the middle ground for these special events, and all that. Ryan, what's your view on this new experience that they're offering?
So I was honestly, when I first saw it, I had sticker shock, but in like the best way possible, because I expected this to be well over 200, 250, somewhere in that range person. So that I did well, I thought was really great. My wife actually was like, wow, that's not bad. You know, we couldn't afford to do it. That's, you know, speaking to your point, we don't have that kind of money to throw it at something like this. But for what it is, it's really, truly not a bad price. But it's that thing where, okay, if you have the expendable income to throw at this, then we have, you know, the perfect vacation for you.
Yeah, and that seems to be the running trend. Versus many things that are going on in Disney. Brian, I mean, you got a kid and stuff. Is this something you would even consider? I mean, I wouldn't think so, but if it was just you and a bunch of friends, would you? I mean, I agree with Ryan. I think the price is fine. What do you think of the experience, though? Do you think it's worth $150 to you?
For a family, no, not per person. But if, for me, if I was going, like, if it was just us and we were going to do it, I would probably, that's something I'd be willing to spend, I think. For what it seemed like you were getting, I think it's not a bad price. But again, that's, you know, it's pricey. And the thing is, they didn't, I don't know, did they make it sound like this is going to be an ongoing thing or just kind of like a short-term thing? Because from what I read...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, from what I read, it was like, here it is, reservations start today, it starts in 3 days.
No, that's exactly what it is. It doesn't say this limited time offer or anything, so I guess they'll just keep it going and just see how it goes and, you know, book stuff dependent upon that.
Yeah, because I mean, to, you know, for me then, that it's definitely something I would do because it's something I could plan for.
Yeah.
To incorporate it into my trip budget, you know? Like, if it is going to continue, I might want to do it when I come down in March. I think maybe that'd be something I would want to do if they're still doing it, because I will be without Kyle when I come down then.
That's a good point.
So,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So, for something like that. Yeah. So, if they're still doing it in March, I would definitely like to do it with you guys because I already will have everything paid for. So, it'll just be, you know, I can just, you know, add that on.
And that's like your dinner. Cool. So, I mean, that kind of.
You know, it's.
Depending upon how much you were originally planning to spend on dinner, right? I mean, I don't know if everyone's like, it's dinner time. Let's drop $1.50.
No, but again, going towards, and this is where I almost feel like it's not towards you, because like every stop you're getting some type of alcoholic beverage, which does help with the price. Because if you were buying those drinks on your own, I mean, I don't think you'll reach 150, but you'd probably reach a comfortable number if you were going to get a couple drinks, a couple of tapas. Yeah. Dishes, you know, and again, we said Citrigo's isn't inexpensive, and you know the private dessert party isn't inexpensive either. So it's like,
no, it's a good offering. I don't think that goes without being said. Also, keep in mind this is only offered Tuesday, Friday, and Sunday.
Interesting that they're doing it on the weekends like that.
Well, I guess they're just hoping for more traffic. You know, more people are there on the weekends, so this is a pricey event. So let's try to offer it during the days where it's busier, and then. You know, maybe Tuesdays is more of like aimed for the locals. One might think it's also not going to be offered between December 23rd and December 31st for obvious reasons. Because if you go, you're insane. That's what's up. Okay, let's move on from that onto our main event. I had recently written an article over at lastgenpodcast.com. That's lastgenpodcast.com. And we have a little blog section that we're starting. Mel does it every week. And
Mostly.
She should do it every week. So I wrote a thing that is... I was curious recently with the release of Moana and all of the hype that was behind it and the hype that was paid off, which is even more impressive, behind Moana... And I started thinking about the Cars 3 trailer came out and everyone's reaction to that. And because that was a thing. If you haven't seen the Cars 3 trailer yet, I mean, you haven't lived.
And even to the point where it made it onto a video game podcast that we listened to.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is funny.
Yeah. Which Giant Bomb. I'll say it out loud. Giant Bomb's awesome.
Yeah.
So I was starting to wonder, like, Walt Disney Animation versus Pixar, Who's running shop right now? And look, this isn't a thing like you can only like one or the other. I know a lot of fandoms get into that stuff. Star Wars, Star Trek, Lord of the Rings and other things with elves and, you know, stupid things like that, you know?
That's a good rhyme, though.
Yeah, that's good.
Lord of the Rings and other things.
Actually, funny enough, Lord of the Rings and Star Wars always gets thrown against each other. It's like, could you find two more things that look visually less like each other? Whatever. So I started looking at, since the birth of Pixar in the Disney realm as a feature filmmaking thing with Toy Story in 95, who has been putting out the better material, but with a bit of a line in the sand drawn at Princess and the Frog? Because I would say, and everyone correct me if I'm wrong on this assumption, I think that everyone sort of feels Lasseter came in. When did he come in?
I think you said 2006
is when he came in. But, you know, it takes a little while for stuff that you're actually fully producing, you know, to get down the line. So Princess and the Frog was a return to hand-drawn animation. it was, you know, John Musker and, you know, coming back for all of that good stuff. Ron Clements. And everyone sort of felt like, oh, wow, Disney has a foot in the door. Like, they seem like they're back again. And so I broke it down into two eras, the pre-Princess and the Frog era of, you know, Toy Story and Walt Disney Animation. And then what's happened since then, as Pixar's plate has kind of filled up. They do more work now. So basically, to give you in the shortest of terms, what happened was, before Princess and the Frog, when Disney was making films between 1995 and 2008, they were churning out the films. Okay, I believe they made 16 of them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Yeah, they made 16 films in 15 years. So that's an average of over a film a year, but 1.14. There's a lot of dumb, easy math that went into this.
Wait, how many did you get?
16.
Oh, I got 17.
Oh, is there one that I'm missing?
Maybe a Goofy movie.
No, that's different. That was Toon Studio.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's not a Walt Disney feature animation release. So it's kind of different.
It was really hard because it went like Walt Disney featured animation, Walt Disney animation. Like, the name kept changing, and I was like,
To give you a quick list of what this includes, actually, we'll just do this. Pocahontas, this is how far this goes back. Pocahontas came out the same year as Toy Story. To me, that's weird. I don't know why.
I don't associate that.
Like, yeah, those 2 years don't work for me for whatever reason in my head. So it was Pocahontas, Hunchback, Hercules, Mulan, Tarzan. That was sort of like the hero-heroine era, you know, when they were doing those, maybe you would say a shot at more like dramatic sort of characters. Fantasia 2000 came out, very, very limited release, very, very small thing. Dinosaur, Emperor's New Groove, Atlantis, Lilo and Stitch, which I remember when that came out and everyone was like, oh, Disney's waking up. It didn't last. Treasure Planet followed that, Brother Bear, Home on the Range, Chicken Little, This is the Graveyard. And then we had an uptick with Meet the Robinsons and Bolt, two films that Lasseter did have say in. In particular, Meet the Robinsons, Bowler Hat Guy was not there before Lasseter got there. And he said, you're missing a good villain. And they then developed the Bowler Hat Guy, which I think is kind of amazing in that film.
He's the best.
The average Rotten Tomatoes score, because this is what I went by, Rotten Tomatoes, Metacritic, out of whatever. I went by Rotten Tomatoes, and the average score for these films was 69%. The highest rated film, which is shocking to me, is Bolt at 89%. Mulan was 86. Lilo and Stitch was 86. So, I mean, they weren't all bombs. Emperor's New Groove was 85. Like, they had a couple of good ones, but the lowest score was Chicken Little at 36 because that movie is hot garbage. And that also is kind of surrounded by Brother Bear at 38%. Just a flat movie. Like, nothing...
I didn't mind that. I went to see it in the movie theater.
Yeah, but I guess most people, though, were just like, that happened. That was 90 minutes of time. Atlantis was also a very big bust at 49%. I think that movie's got some great parts, but it's also a horrid ripoff of a much better film by Studio Ghibli. Why am I blanking?
I don't know.
Castle in the Sky. That is the much superior version of that film, and oh my God, are they close. Going over to Pixar during this time. Oh, and also keep in mind, during that time of year, that time of info, the average worldwide box office for those films was $249 million. Now, there's some real bombs in there, but $250 between 95 and 08, that's not terrible. It's not great. You want more production, obviously, out of some of the films, but like Chicken Little made $315 million, proving that nothing else was going on when that movie came out. Like, if you can release a movie at a right time where there's just sort of nothing else going on, you can make a killing. Hunchback of Notre Dame made $325. Pocahontas made $346. That might be the most. Dinosaur made the most at $300. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Dinosaur, though, made $350 million. Like, no one remembers that movie anymore.
I didn't even see it.
I didn't. I did because D.B. Sweeney. I don't know. Toe pick. Tarzan made $448. Did you not? Do you not know the Toe Pick reference?
Nope.
Wow.
Oh, jeez.
Toe Pick. Anyone who out there gets the Topic reference, just send a bunch of photos onto the Disney Magic Hour page with the Topic.
And just tag Melissa in it.
Tag Melissa in every one of them. So $249 million was their average. Let's go over to Pixar. All right, 95 to 08. Toy Story, Bug's Life, Toy Story 2, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, Incredibles, Cars, Ratatouille, WALL-E. Cars by far has the lowest number at 74% on Rotten Tomatoes. In second place, 92% with Bug's Life. That was the other one that was, it was all right, I guess. Their average score during this time of year was 94.4. This era, not time of year. That's insane. Yeah. What's even more insane is that two movies are tied for the highest score with 100. It's Toy Story 1 and 2. They only made, though, and this is the big thing. Now, a lot of this for me goes into how much are you making people put out a year to try to make a dollar. The average films produced per year is 0.64, almost a third less of what Walt Disney Animation was putting out at that point. Average box office for Pixar, $555 million. That's an insane number, especially because we're talking about 95. Like, this wasn't just yesterday.
That's more than twice what Disney made, right?
Yeah, they averaged more than two times of the Walt Disney Studios. Now let's go forward. 09 hits, Princess and the Frog comes out. There's a new regime, Eisner is out. The Iger era has really, really started to sink in. But more importantly, the Lasseter era has really started to sink in. And now we get Princess and the Frog, Tangled, Winnie the Pooh, a smallest release that you can imagine for that film. It was only in theaters about 2-3 weeks and saw roughly half the amount of screens as every other film on this list. Wreck-It Ralph, Frozen, Big Hero 6, Zootopia, and Moana. Disney now goes from an average of 69, is that what it says? 69% from the previous page to 90.5%.
For Rotten Tomatoes.
For Rotten Tomatoes score. That's insane.
That's crazy.
That's upping your quality by almost 30%. And now we have very Pixar-type numbers in some aspects. The lowest score on this is Princess and the Frog at 84. Remember, Cars was the lowest at 74. For that golden era of Pixar. Now you've got Princess and the Frog at 84%, which I'll argue is probably 4 or 5 points low.
At least, yeah.
In my opinion. That's just my opinion. Yeah. Whatever.
No,
that's fine.
It's mine too.
I think it's going to go lower. So. Yeah. And the highest score, now I believe Moana went down like a tick or so. Zootopia at 98%. Zootopia, not Frozen, which you would think because of how big Frozen was. But they also made $1 billion on two films in this era, Frozen and Zootopia. And actually, Zootopia right now is $20 million ahead of Frozen. Now, if you put in merchandise and stuff, I'm sure Frozen blows it out the door, out the back window, into the other galaxy. But they average now $577 million. This is not including Moana, because obviously we don't have numbers yet on the whole scope of Moana. And it is including the ultra tiny release of Winnie the Pooh, which only brought in $33 million. If you take Winnie the Pooh out of that, this number jumps to about $690 million. That's a phenomenal turnaround. Huge. What about Pixar, though? Strangely, and just to keep in mind, Disney also lowered their average film per year to exactly one film a year. All right, they cut back. And from cutting back, the quality went up, the money went up, everything went up. Let's jump over to Pixar, though. Where is Pixar? Oh, there's a weird gap in this page.
Oh, it didn't
load up correctly. So let's go over. Okay, here it goes. We got it now. Pixar from 2009 to present. All right, we've got Up, Toy Story 3, Cars 2, Brave, Monsters University, Inside Out, Good Dinosaur, Finding Dory. Now the numbers change. The average Rotten Tomatoes score on Pixar films now drops to 82.6. That is a chunk. Now, a lot of that chunk is Cars 2. Cars 2 is in Chicken Little territory now at 39%. If you take Cars 2 out of the picture, they average 88.8%. still a bit of a loss, around like, you know, maybe 7 to 10% loss in that number. They also start producing more films. Remember, it was 0.64 for Pixar? Now it's 1.0. Now they're making a film a year. And the numbers, though, financially, are still incredible. $732 million average box office, because these films sell. And they also had a pair of billion-dollar films in Toy Story 3 and Finding Dory. But Toy Story 3 came out a long time ago. Ticket prices weren't as high as they were now, which shows just how insane of a hit Toy Story 3 was.
I didn't remember it was so long ago.
Yeah.
It was 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah, that's when Lotso came in.
Yeah.
Oh, Lotso. So we have seen a bit of a shift. Walt Disney Studios, to recap, now averaging 90.5 on Rotten Tomatoes. Pixar, since 2009, 82.6. A lot of sequels in there. A lot of middle ground movies. Brave, 78%. Monsters University, 78%. Good Dinosaur, 77%. This was a studio that, outside of Cars, their lowest score was 92 in their opening silo of films, which was a long silo. 95 to 2008 is not a short window. That's a huge window. So they were killing it for a long time. And up in Toy Story 3, you could say are probably maybe two of their best films ever. There's, you know, there's no problem with that. And Finding Dory is fantastic. Went out of nowhere. So what's happened here? Like, what's going on? Well, a weird correlation that came out of all this was the less films you make a year, the higher your averages are, basically. So Pixar from 95 to 08, they made less than a film a year, 0.64, and they averaged 94.4. And at the lowest spectrum, Walt Disney Animation was making 1.14 films a year, 69% lowest totem pole. So that's just all the numbers. But now I'm curious of people's reactions to that, or their subconscious reaction, and just what are they thinking of when they put Walt Disney Animation and measure it right now up to Pixar. I think if I asked this question a couple of years ago, there would be no question it was Pixar. Pixar is the gold standard. They probably still are, maybe in many ways, the gold standard. But has Walt Disney Animation finally caught up with them? So I'm going to shut up for a while. And Ryan, what's your feeling on this? Basically, what I'm trying to get at is one studio or the other exciting you more? And if so, why do you think that's happening?
So I thought about this long and hard since the article last week, since thinking about this topic. And I've been trying to find my own correlation personally. Like, you know, yes, Pixar still is that gold standard, but things like Moana, things like Zootopia are exciting me again with the animation, with the Walt Disney Animation side. I don't know if it's, you know, for me, Pixar has drifted into that territory of we're going to sequelize a lot of things. And like Finding Dory, that's great. Cars 2, that's the other end of the spectrum. So that's the gamble you're taking when you take this. You know, the thing we've talked about is we grew up with a stellar slate of movies, you know, starting with like The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion King. Those are what we grew up with. And now that's the quality we expect to see from a Disney movie. That's the same quality that people who are the young animators who are coming in and starting to develop some of these stories are expecting of themselves. Like, they don't want to turn out the same the product that happened in those mid-90s. So it's almost that piece of we're going to take pride in where we are, and that this is who we represent, these, you know, this golden era that we all grew up with, and we're not going to accept that as consumers, and we're not going to accept that as animators. But it's a really interesting piece. You know, the other thing I started thinking about is, in the minds of some consumers, is this all getting muddled? You know, is it because now we've lost the hand-drawn animation again? Is it because it's all computer-generated? You're not telling one film from the next, and you're just really truly being attracted to stories that interest you now. And we've lost that. You know, Pixar and Disney are interchangeable in some consumers' mind. I don't know. I haven't been able to kind of track that piece.
But well, I can back you on that, because I would say that a majority of people for a very long time, and probably still in circles, think Big Hero 6 is a Pixar film.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there are people who thought Bolt was a Pixar film, because you knew Lasseter had come in and save that film at one point and said, nope, we're turning a corner with this. And so we kind of get that piece. And how much is this that Lasseter, you know, I'm throwing a lot of pieces out here, but how much of this is Lasseter when he came in, because he knew Pixar was safe, because he knew what they were developing, he jumped so heavily into Walt Disney Animation that some of it slipped off on the Pixar side. So I think there's a lot of variables in play here, but I think for myself personally, right now it's what piece is interesting most, what story is interesting most, and it's typically the new content. It's typically the new stories that I don't know. Short of Incredibles 2, which I am thrilled is coming down the line, I'm looking at Coco, I'm looking at Gigantic, I'm looking at the things that I don't already know the world and I want to see more of. But even speaking to your point about one film a year, Pixar has two next year. Walt Disney Animation has zero on the schedule for next year.
Yeah.
So that's where that's where the scale has shifted. The next Disney Animation movie we're going to see is Wreck-It Ralph 2. So now we're back to sequels on Disney Animation side. Where is that? So it's a lot of playing both sides against the middle.
Yeah, no, that's really well said. Brian, what's your feelings on this? You growing up with a kid. Kyle kind of grew up in the Pixar era. I don't really know if you were bringing him, excited about the next Disney film so much. He was young. He'll pretty much watch anything, but... Chicken Little's not good, and I remember that was a movie he loved. That he watched a lot. I don't know if
When they were young, he's actually got starting to get taste now. Sometimes I don't agree with his taste, but he's actually more discerning in what he watched. Before it was just, honestly, anything like Chicken Little was entertaining to him. I agree that I still think Pixar is the gold standard. To me, I would still consider that. But to what Ryan was saying, I think to the general public, they don't know the difference. It's all Disney. Pixar, Walt Disney Animation, they don't know which one is making which. They just know it's coming from Walt Disney. So from that aspect, I don't know if it makes that much of a difference. What it feels to me like is that they've flipped in terms of Disney Animation Studios is the one pushing the envelope. They're the ones that are taking the chances. They're the ones that are telling more intricate stories and more interesting stories. And Pixar has gone into either a sequel or movies like, to me, The Good Dinosaur and Monster University. They're safe movies. They're safe movies with the safe story, what kid doesn't like a little caveman boy who acts like a dog and a dinosaur?
Yeah.
They're going to like that. That's not Pixar.
That movie really did not do well. That movie made $332 million. Mm-hmm. You compare to the other Pixar films, and the next lowest Pixar film, we're talking about $540 million. Brave, which I remember Brave was, everyone was like, oh, this movie flopped. It still made $500 million, but it was called a flop. But Good Dinosaur made $332 million. And to your point, I agree with you. I think that Disney is making more of, I want to say risky, but it's not risky. But you know how you're saying, they're avoiding the safe films, but they're also taking very overdone plot lines, putting a small twist on it and repackaging it. So we feel like, oh, they did something new. Like Frozen really didn't do anything new except they were sisters.
Yeah.
Didn't do anything really new except they just took out love interest. Like we've seen the movie a thousand times.
Yeah.
But they're figuring out different ways of telling the old stories. And I think it's bringing more people in. But Brian, for you personally, where right now, if I could put in front of you, basically, all right, this is a good way of doing it. If I could put in front of you right now, Wreck-It Ralph 2, I guess Cars 3 is the other option. Ouch.
I figured that.
Coco. What if I put Coco or Gigantic in front of you right now? Which one do you think you'd want to see first? Because I get it. The general public probably doesn't know. The general public also doesn't realize Magic Kingdom is called Magic Kingdom. So that's okay.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
we're in our bubble. What studio with their future releases, which one is more appealing to you? Ryan was saying.
Definitely Disney Animation Studios. I mean, the trailers aside, because their trailers are horrible.
Yeah.
We've said this before. But Zootopia, I could not be more impressed with them with something than I was with Zootopia. I went in not wanting to see that movie at all, and it was you know, it's just a great film. They take a very adult topic, very timely topic, and they put it in a setting that kids can understand. And you know, it feels like a Zootopia feels like a Pixar movie, like what a Pixar movie used to be. And the Pixar studio films feel like what Walt Disney Animation. It feels like they've honestly done a complete flip in terms of the feel of the movies that come out of the two studios.
And Melissa, now, what about you? What's your take on this? Where does your higher interest lean, and why do you think, if it's flipped or whatever it was originally, what's like your take on this?
Well, as I was looking at all the movies, I thought it was interesting because, like, you know, from Pocahontas to Tarzan, like, you still had that trickle effect of Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast. You still had that Disney type of movie, especially with the music. Then you look at that chunk in between from Fantasia 2000 to Bolt. There's really no memorable music beyond the Lilo and Stitch stuff that I can remember at all. And that, for me, was always what a Disney movie was. It was always the music.
And Lilo and Stitch isn't the character singing it. It just has music.
Yeah, I mean, like,
you know,
the
like
opening
Lilo
song.
Lilo and Stitch don't actually sing any
exactly.
of the music. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah, it's more like a soundtrack. The
soundtrack is great, yeah.
Yeah, so you look at that, and then you're like, oh, okay, that kind of went weird for me. They weren't, to me, feeling like typical Disney films, you know, it lost the music. Then you go to Princess and the Frog and Tangled and Frozen and Moana, and you get all of that music that I love back. You know, Zootopia had the one song that was really good, that it's catchy, you know.
But isn't it interesting, though, that Zootopia is the highest rated one, not a musical?
No, I know. Zootopia,
I'm but I'm saying like that, I think that's really interesting because I agree with you. Them returning to their roots. Had them return to their roots, but then the film that did the most money and has the highest tomato reader, that's not a musical.
No,
isn't that interesting? So strange.
Yeah, and it is interesting when you look at it like that. But for me, like, that was kind of what got me back into like that Disney mode, and that's why I really like this chunk of movies. Now, to Pixar's side, the movies for me that were the most interesting were the ones that were like the quote unquote original stories, with WALL-E and Up and Ratatouille and Inside Out, you know, having those really unique takes on simple things in a way, you know. But
except Inside Out, that's not a simple one.
Well, they're simple but complex at the same time. And I think for those movies, like the ones that I named, they're like simple because they're, you know, basic stories, but then they go on another level for adults that gives you that complexity that becomes like the Pixar standard. Because for me, like, I didn't see Toy Story 1 or 2 in the movie theater. I remember seeing Bug's Life and I was just like, whatever. But like, when I was able to understand the, you know, elevated storyline behind those other films, like, that's really what got me. And it's like, you know, I think when we saw Inside Out, Pete Docter, I think he said that, like, we don't make kid films. Sorry, that's a little harsh. We don't make kid films. And it's true, you know, with those chunk of movies, they were really making, you know, just really well-told stories that happen to be computer animated. But it's funny, like you say, like, now with everything being computer animated, people can't tell the difference. I mean, there's still blog posts and stuff about Anastasia. Everybody says it's a Disney film because it was beautifully hand-drawn, but it's not. So it's
a,
like,
Don Bluth film, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's really interesting how, like, back then, like, if it was a really well-done hand-drawn animation, like, people were saying it was Disney. And, like, now, if it's just a really good computer-animated film, like Zootopia, the animals' fur and stuff looked gorgeous. You just like, oh, it must be Pixar. But, like, no, now it's not. Now it's, you know, now Walt Disney Studios has its game, I think, back up. And, like, looking at the next couple of years, I don't know what I'm really looking forward to, because I really want to see Wreck-It Ralph 2, like, that world intrigues me. Gigantic, I'm not really sure about, because I haven't seen anything, and I'm kind of just like...
They've been very quiet about that one so far, because it's also so far off that there's no reason to put a spotlight on it now.
Yeah.
And then let the interest wane. You always got to, like, hold it and let it, you know, build up.
Yeah. But I mean, just by the title, Wreck-It Ralph 2, I'm in. you know, for the title art. I'm in for Coco. I want to see that. I'm hoping that's really cool. It looks like it'll be really cool. Yeah. It looks like it'll be a cool world.
Makes me think of Grim Fandango, one of my favorite PC click and adventure games. You know, makes me think of that.
And of course, you know, we've been waiting however many years, 14 years or so, for Incredibles 2. I mean, that's a sequel. And like, you look at like the times between the Toy Story sequels, like you have like 5 or 6 years between some of them, where it's like, you know, then you have like banging out like all the Cars movies, and it's like,
yeah,
slow down. Yeah. Like, I don't know if that's why sequels in that Pixar realm don't maybe feel as good.
I really think that the Cars sequels have poisoned our overall view of Pixar sequels, because Toy Story 1, 2, and 3 are incredible. Finding Dory wound up being fantastic. Monsters University,
I liked it a lot.
I like it. I think it's a lot of fun.
It's a fun movie.
It's not,
sure,
you know, the top of the echelon for Pixar, but I think it's a lot of fun. They knew exactly what they were like. They made the exact movie they wanted to make, in my opinion.
Yes.
And we may be poisoned a little bit against that just because we grew up in the era where everything was a direct to video sequel that we saw. You know, all the Little Mermaids, all the Beauty and the Beast, all the Aladdin. They just kept sequelizing everything and sending them home. Return to Neverland. And we were like, you have, you know, killed this world that I love on some level. So I think there's a trepidation on our part to kind of go, sequel, yeah, I don't know if animation's the right place to do that.
Yeah.
That's a good point. And then when we look at Pixar, you know, Brian, what you were saying, you know, you like the original ideas. And without an argument, post-Toy Story 3, the most successful, in my opinion, artistic film out of Pixar is Inside Out.
Yeah.
And really, if you measure that film against even all the Walt Disney animation films, I think that's the film that took the biggest chance and tried tackling the largest subject. So when Pixar shines, it shines brighter the way no one else can. Like, I love the streak that Walt Disney Animation is on and all that. There is no way in heaven or earth they would have been able to make WALL-E.
No.
Like, that is such a film, such a specific, incredible film. I don't think anyone but Pixar, and that's not saying Disney Animation doesn't have that talent. It's not their aim. Like, they don't go for that kind of thing. But when Pixar does, they usually knock it out of the park. And I feel that when they go for the more straightforward kind of plot, that's when it sort of feels meddling a little bit.
Well, not as engaging. You know what? I'm just looking back through over this list. I think what we have to try to remember also is that first era was so ridiculously unbelievable that
may never be.
It makes anything else pale in comparison. When you go back and look at these, I'm looking at the numbers and stuff, and anybody else would take those numbers. Any anyone else?
Yeah. Yeah.
And especially taking the Cars out of it and, you know, the Cars 2 out of it, that, you know what, it's not a bad lineup of films. It's just compared to what they did when they came out of the gate, it doesn't rate the same as that, but it's really not bad. I think rather than Pixar falling off as much, I think they have fallen off a bit. I think just this Animation Studios has raised so much up to get to, you know, near the level of Pixar. I think it's, you know, Pixar came down a little and Animation Studios shot up.
Yeah.
So now they're kind of neck and neck.
Yes.
But it's not, you know, it wasn't like Pixar fell from grace. I mean, you can't have Finding Dory and Inside Out with two of the last 3 years, you know, the movies over 90% and, you know, one over a billion, one almost $1 billion, you know.
Yeah.
You ain't doing bad.
But the surrounding films, Cars 2, Brave and Monsters University, and Good Dinosaur, I mean, Monsters University is the only one that I'll really go back to. Mm-hmm. Moana became what I wanted Brave to be.
Yeah.
Everything that I wanted Brave to do, and it really taking the mythology and being like, no, 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 we're gonna shape the narrative and let it, you know, go around, you know, this mythology idea. I feel like they stunted their bet with the whole "My Mom's a Bear" thing. I've said it a million times. I know that isn't the actual plot, and that's, you know, it's more of a figurative thing. But ultimately, it's "My Mom's a Bear." I got to turn it back, and didn't follow up on all the other promise that I think that film had. Now, I wonder what that film looked like originally. you know, when it was with his original director and stuff, and maybe they got a little gun shy. I have no idea. Who knows? Because the other time that that Pixar made a directorial change, it was putting Brad Bird into Ratatouille, and that worked out pretty well. So it's not like switching directors has been a death's kiss for them. You know, they've actually had some pretty good results with it. But yeah, Brian, I think like what you said is kind of nails it on the head, is that Pixar has dipped a little bit, but the more impressive stat is how much Disney Animation has upped their game. Mm-hmm. And now, Ryan, this is what we got coming out in the future, okay? In the immediate future. Now, this is kind of counterculture to everything that we were saying, because we were like, we don't want sequels are weird to us.
Right.
But if I say to you, Wreck-It Ralph 2, Gigantic, and Frozen 2, and then we'll include an untitled Lin-Manuel Miranda film with Byron Howard, who was the co-director of Tangled, Tangled Ever After, and Zootopia. They're doing an animated film on also, feature film. Those are like the main 4 films coming out for Disney animation. Pixar is Cars 3, Coco, Incredibles 2, and Toy Story 4. Now, they've been clear, after this series of sequels, Pixar is going away from sequels for the foreseeable future. Both those slates out in front of you, which one are you steering your boat towards first?
Yeah, it's really that case by case kind of basis. Incredibles 2, I really want to see. Coco, I really want to see. And those are both, we're both looking at Pixar there. Gigantic, I feel like this is Disney again being gung-shy with saying, hey, we know it's Jack and the Beanstalk. We're not going to say it's Jack and the Beanstalk. We're going the Tangled route. We're going to give it this adjective and just run with it and see what happens. The Lin-Manuel Miranda, Byron Howard film is interesting to me. Like that on yes, that's going to be an animated feature. That's going to be a musical. I'm really interested to see where we go with that.
Yeah.
So it's really story by story right now. We could talk about Cars 3 for an hour at this point, based off of a 45-second trailer we've all seen, and the poster they put out today doubling down on that.
I didn't see it.
Yeah.
I'll look at it right now.
Yeah, go look for that. So I think it's going to be a case by case basis, and I think it's going to be it's going to be what story really works. I really love the story of Polynesia, all the stories of Polynesia. So Moana was a real, something I was really interested in looking at. Coco with the Day of the Dead is a very similar thing. It's a new avenue we haven't pursued mm-hmm. in a Disney movie, in a Pixar movie. So I want to see what they can do with that.
Yeah.
Just saw the poster.
You saw the poster.
I guess they're just going to murder McQueen.
I guess so. That's
fine.
What it is. Yeah.
Thing that's interesting with the Pixar sequels that are coming up, particularly Incredibles 2 and Toy Story 4, the time in between the movies, like from Incredibles, which came out in 2004, there's 14 years in between. So, it's a sequel, but you could have had a couple children in that time,
Yeah, no, they didn't. Well, it wasn't like Pirates of the Caribbean where it was like, hey, this movie was a hit. Someone slap together some ideas and get actors in a room and we'll figure it out as we do it. This was Brad Bird for a long time saying, I'm not going back there until I know I have the right story.
Yeah.
And maybe tomorrow, I will say, having this be his film following up Tomorrowland, which was his biggest critical failure, that always kind of puts you on an interesting foot where you're like, are you just going back to safe ground? But the same can be said for Stanton when Ghost of John Carter. What do they call it?
Oh,
just John Carter, because that's such an interesting title. When that movie, had the issues that it had, he went back to Finding Dory, and that let off my alarms. I was like, oh, going back home, huh? But Finding Dory wound up being phenomenal.
I got to rewatch that movie.
It's great because we own it. So, yay.
And then, the same thing with Toy Story 4. It's not as many years, but it's 9 years in between. So, again, a good chunk of time. Yeah. That's how old Kyle is, right? 9, 10?
Yeah. He's going to be 10 on Monday.
So, yeah. That's weird. In his whole lifespan, it's the time between the movies. So, I think for that aspect, the sequels might work a little bit more than, you were saying, Pirates, or how Ryan was saying the direct-to VHS or DVD, stuff that was just thrown
direct
at us.
Direct to Laserdisc.
I never had that. I had all those big old VHSs, though.
I think of all of these, though, Toy Story 4 is the one that to me, I'm sitting going, no, we've told this story. We have bookended this story. This is really one. I don't care about Bo Peep at this point. It's gone. Let's leave it alone.
Yeah.
I love all three Toy Stories. This is the one that I don't want them messing with at this point. Like, I'm like, no, please just walk away. Just walk away.
Well, no, I agree. I think the difference is, well, Toy Story 4, I kind of agree with. I wouldn't mind staying in the Toy Story universe with what they do for the TV specials, for the holidays,
yeah,
that type of stuff. Like, you can stay in that world, but you don't need to make a feature film out of it.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, but the thing is, these ones that are coming up are ones that, with the stories, actually lend themselves to sequels. Even though we might not want a Toy Story 4, it's a story, it's a situation that can have sequels endlessly.
Yeah.
Same thing with The Incredibles. That ended on for a sequel to come out. Other than merchandising reasons, there was nobody clamoring for a Cars 2 sequel, especially one that had nothing to do with the original story, because all of a sudden Mater's a spy. And same thing with Monsters University. Like, nobody needed a origin story for Mike and Sully. Like, you don't need that.
Yeah.
So I think that's the difference with the sequels coming out, is that their universes and their stories that lead themselves to sequels.
Do you think Frozen leads itself to a sequel? Like, is that a thing that you want to see?
No, I don't either. But
and I like that movie a lot, but
I didn't think Finding Dory. I mean, I didn't think Finding Nemo led itself to a sequel either. And
that's a good point.
It worked out. So I'm not going to prejudge it based off of whether I think it could use a sequel or not. But, I mean, Frozen, that they didn't really explore that world that much. So I guess they could. You know, it's a pretty interesting, world that they have in that. So I'm hoping that works.
She gets summer powers, right? I mean, can we all agree that that's probably going to happen?
Oh, Anna.
Anna gets summer powers and Elsa has winter powers and they fight each other and they both die?
No.
Yeah, and that's how fall and spring come to be. Yeah.
Well, the thing to consider about Incredibles 2 is that we have this coming out really a month after Infinity War, and the Avengers is going to come out. So you're going to have superhero overload summer, and their kid, and whether or not Avengers is going to be okay for you to take your kids to or not is still up in the air at this point. So now we have this. Now we're going to have the other side to that, where okay, great, we have superheroes that the kids can go see this summer too. Like, that's a very smart bookending deal on that summer for families.
I think also with the approach that they're taking with Incredibles 2 is that 14 years has passed.
Yeah.
The family has grown, like, literally as time has gone by. So.
Which I'm interested in, because Jack-Jack was, like, so great. Jack-Jack Attack was the best short.
And
like,
you can also say Jack-Jack could be a villain. Like, he could be, like, the Anakin Skywalker, like, if you wanted to, like, the most obvious connection. You know, the kid who has everything. And could be like the world's greatest hero, but loses his way. And mom and dad and brother and sister, who are all, four different corners of the earth, maybe, have to go and save their kid.
Yeah.
And then he can kill Mr. Incredible, and we just have a whole.
Then it all comes forward. Then there's a ghost at the end. It's Hayden Christensen.
And then they bury him, and there's a little piece of dirt that rumbles. And
All right. Well, what about you guys? You know, if you're listening, I asked you on Facebook, your thoughts towards this. And it's kind of mixed in with everyone's questions. So I'm going to go to the page right now, and we are going to read through your questions and your thoughts on the whole Pixar v. Disney. Do you bleed ink? Or code? I guess code? Yeah. Do you bleed code? It's not bad. Oh, just a really quick side note. Funny enough, if you put Incredibles to the side because Incredibles 2 wins over everything, the one I am the most interested in is Coco. Because I know about it, and it seems like they're trying something new. But man, Wreck-It Ralph, can't wait.
Just love I think what they want to do with Coco, that type of setting and stuff is really...
Yeah,
it's great. I love the little bit of it you got in Princess and the Frog, of setting,
Yes,
I think it'll blow. I think it'll blow Frozen out of the water for November release.
Yeah, I think in the end it's going to. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's up, Melissa? It looked like you wanted to say something.
Maybe. I don't remember.
What's that? That was loud. Okay. Do you want to go to the Facebook stuff?
Sure.
Let's go to the Facebook stuff. So I put up, you know, post your questions here. And also I told everyone we're going to be discussing Pixar versus Walt Disney Animation. You know, which studio is top for you? Which future slate of films has you the most excited? Zach Rambound says, and this is not the Pixar related stuff, but if the Aerosmith coaster goes away, what band or theme would you want to see replace it? Also got my tickets for Mania in Orlando. Did you get yours? Yes, I did. So yeah, I will be at me and Jimmy Styles and Mel. We will be at WrestleMania. So this will be my first one. I'm really excited.
I hope The Rock is there and he comes out to your welcome.
I probably. You know what? He probably will.
That's my dream.
If I get Goldberg, Lesnar round three, though, pretty sure that's going to happen. All right. So if Aerosmith as the band went away, because evidently that probably is going to happen, what band or theme would you want to see put in its place? Brian, what do you got on that? Anything?
Skip me. Go to someone else first. Let me think a sec.
terrified to ask Melissa, so I'm going to go to Ryan.
So this came to me, actually, I had no idea what to say for this, even though I think we've talked about this once before, but I started thinking about it. We can't bring Marvel in because Marvel's still, you know, off on hiatus on Florida. But what if, let's play off of what we're talking about, what if we'd put Incredibles in there and we have an Incredibles coaster in the dark? I think, you know, they're going to have the drop, you know, the breakout for Guardians of the Galaxy over in California, similar kind of thing, but put it in a roller coaster for The Incredibles. Let's go with that.
Yeah, that's nice. That's good. That's hard to argue with. Melissa?
I like that idea. If you had to stick with a coaster idea, I guess that's where, like, maybe something with Wreck-It Ralph?
No, I want Wreck-It Ralph to be more with Sugar Rush, but something that I'm actually in a car. Like a car that I can semi-control, and at least my brain thinks that. I want more on that. I don't want just a simple coaster.
I don't know. I'm not really up on the music scene.
Black Sabbath. That's all that should go in there, really. That's the only one answer. I don't know. If they do music, I really don't know. I think that's weird to put another band in there.
I don't know if there's a band now that would be that you could put in there that would have that same kind of iconic thing but still be kind of safe.
Yeah, I don't.
You know what I mean? I can't think of any.
And then if you try to put in more than one band, you end up with something like, you know, the Rip It Rocket over at Universal, and it just seems like we're ripping people off.
Yeah. I would just change it to a different
theme. You know what might work well? Nightmare Before Christmas through, like, the Oogie Boogie section, because it's got, that same type of look, like, when he goes into, like, the Blacklight stuff.
Maybe something like that would be cool. That would really be good. That's a good one, Brian. Good call. Joey Mayfield Stewart says, this is now towards the Pixar discussion. For a while, Pixar was king, especially during the dark decade.
I like that.
But lately, Walt Disney Animation is nailing it. Moana was spellbinding. I'm looking forward to Gigantic. My question, though, with the announcement of improvements to Epcot, I think Future World would benefit from a Big Hero 6 attraction. In parentheses, a highly underrated movie. I agree 100%. What would your ideal attraction for Big Hero 6 be? Can we do a new version of, like, you know, the human body thing, but, you know, utilizing Baymax, you know?
I was thinking the same thing, like the Wonders of Life Pavilion, but Baymax is your ambassador for that.
That would be great. I would love to see that. Melissa, what about you?
I don't remember the Wonders of Life Pavilion.
It was Wonder, and it had a lot of life in it. But, you know, other than that, it's Body Wars, Cranium Command, right? Cranium Command?
Yep.
Cranium Command.
Reruns of Herman's Head. That's pretty much what it all was.
Oh, let's just make it all not Pixar. Wow. See, I did it already. Let's put Baymax in one ride. Let's put Inside Out and Cranium Command. Like, we have a whole thing going on here.
Yeah. Inside Out is kind of like Cranium Command on, you know, talent. Sorry, but that's what's up.
Wasn't George Wendt in Cranium Command?
Was he?
Yeah, he was.
Wow.
He was the stomach.
He was the stomach, of course.
Ratzenberger made out better. Ratzenberger made out better on that deal, I guess.
Hans and Franz was in there. They were the heart.
What?
Franz.
My yep. God. Yeah, no wonder okay. that's not around anymore.
I liked that ride an awful lot when I was a kid.
I don't remember that much of it. I remember going in there, but not a lot.
I liked it.
Melissa, what were you going to say?
Since I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
Jesus.
for me, I want to see what they do in Tokyo with Big Hero 6, but I would love if you could do like a flyover San Francisco, like ride with, like fly with Baymax kind of thing.
That would be fun.
That would be fun. Like they're doing with the Iron Man.
They literally just put you
in
a plane. They're like, look, you're just going to fly over Shanghai. Here's a decal of San Francisco. We'll see you in like 4 hours.
Soaring with Baymax.
Yeah, soaring with Baymax. Oh, God, I would do that. I would do soaring with Baymax. That would be amazing. If they actually had like a physical thing that would, you know, an animatronic that would like fly with you.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, forget it. I'd be on that ride all day. That'd be great. okay, Scott Ringler says, right now we have Disney versus Pixar animation. But any thoughts on whether Marvel Studios or Lucasfilm Division might join that field of conversation, I guess is what you mean?
Disney Animation Studios.
Oh, thank you. Disney Animation Studios did Big Hero 6 with Marvel IP. Do you think that will continue with other Marvel animated feature films? Might there be a Star Wars, Indiana Jones animated films? If so, which studio? Well, I mean, Star Wars is already doing their animated thing, and that's through Lucasfilm, and that's Rebels. I don't think that they'll do feature film animation films. If you want to tell me a young Indiana Jones would become an animated film, I don't think it would be a film. I think that would be a show. I don't think they're going to do anything like that animation-wise for a feature. Yes.
Melissa. Yeah, I could see that being a show. I know Kyle would love that.
Yeah.
He
and it was.
Indiana
I mean, it
Jones.
Used to be a live-action show.
It was live-action?
Yeah. It was live-action,
It was
yeah.
live-action, yeah.
That's the only way I really see that happening. Obviously, Marvel has a bunch of already animated things, but I think Star Wars, towards animation, maybe you'll get a new show eventually if Rebels ever tells its complete story, which I want to see what kind of impact Rogue One has on Rebels. I hope there is.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope so, too. And
yes.
There's a ton of Marvel TV shows right now on Disney XD. There's a ton of them.
They're all over the place. Marvel's everywhere. Star Wars, actually, you would say if you wanted to, not that I want Star Wars to be this all over the place, but, man, Marvel is like 10 times more visible out there than Star Wars IPs are. So everyone being like, they're making too many Star Wars films. Like, they made one extra Star Wars film. Calm yourself down.
They have one TV show and one extra film. It's okay. Yeah. There's literally on Sunday mornings, there is like 4 or 5 Marvel shows that are on.
So,
we're all watching this recon just to get our fix of something else Star Wars. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So I think we're good on that one, though, for that. Brad Kalmason asks, how much further can Disney take the animated films to live action and or Broadway? Beauty and the Beast is hitting the trifecta currently. Frozen is getting both Broadway and a Lego treatment. They're getting that small little like Frozen Wonderland thing, like a little TV version that they're getting. So how much further can they go? The real business answer to that is till something bombs.
Yeah, Aladdin's going to hit that trifecta.
Yeah, Aladdin's going to hit that trifecta. That's right. Yep.
Lion King.
Lion King will hit that trifecta as well. I think it's until something happens so John Carter-esque that everyone says, hey, we're not doing this anymore. Thanks. that'll be when it ends. But if they keep putting out quality, and I'm not saying Maleficent was quality, but it made money. And I don't think the Alice in Wonderland films are quality, but they made money.
And Cinderella was good.
Cinderella was good and it made money. But like, as long as these things make money, it's not going to stop.
It's coming out.
Yeah.
They'll go back into the archives for this. I mean, we'll see Robin Hood. We'll see Dumbo. They'll go after everything if it keeps working. Yeah.
I think wasn't Dumbo announced with Tim Burton?
Yeah.
I believe it was. Yeah.
That is so damn weird.
That's like in the distant future.
He's
going to
be Dunderbo.
Just let him do the pink elephant segment and then take it away from him.
Yeah, and then just, get Henry Selick in there. Disney needs to make Henry Selick an offer and get Henry Selick working for Disney. I know that he signed a contract years ago.
Who's that?
For a film. He was the director of Nightmare Before Christmas and more recently Coraline.
Oh, okay.
Yes, everyone. Tim Burton. I had to tell this to a couple of people recently. Tim Burton, zero to do with the movie Coraline. He had nothing to do with the writing. He was not a producer. He was not a director. He had nothing to do with that. And even, you know, Nightmare Before Christmas, he was producer and the writer, not the director. That was Henry Selick. Okay, moving onwards. Stan Solo. Yes, Rogue One broke Fandango, but from everything that I've seen, advanced ticket sales are not nearly as huge as they were for The Force Awakens. Is Star Wars losing some ground, or was it just poor marketing? No, I think The Force Awakens was a event unto you cannot duplicate. I don't think it has any bearing on Rogue One. And I think that you'll notice that when Episode 8 is around the corner, and the numbers for that, after you see a couple of trailers for that film, destroy everything. If there's a little bit of a dip because from The Force Awakens to Rogue One, it's simply because The Force Awakens is a monster unto itself when it was coming out.
It was like a rebirth.
Yeah, I mean, so. Han was coming back, you knew Chewie, you know, Chewbacca was coming back. So that was like, you know, marketing gold. I don't think it's either losing ground or poor marketing. I just think it's nothing was going to be The Force Awakens that came out afterwards, except for Episode 8.
Yeah, this was also, I mean, The Force Awakens was an entire fan base feeling re-energized. And they were like, oh my God, we don't have to make excuses for watching the last three films, you know, which a lot of us felt. So I just think that it was more of an upswell that you really, really can't match. You can, there's political lines that you could actually do with that. You know, when, you know, turnout is so incredible during one thing and then not, you know, a couple of years later, it has nothing to do with support. It's just because that upswelling of support is so massive. It's really hard to duplicate over and over again. Haley Scout, I'm sorry, Melissa, were you going to say something? Nope. I'm sorry. Oh, sorry. Haley Scout Broberg, sorry if I'm saying that wrong. Any plans to do a Christmas/holiday-themed episode or two? All right. Would love to hear all of you discuss the few Christmas movies/shorts Disney has put out over the years. Melissa, go ahead.
I had this idea the other night. Absolutely. And I was like, is there enough to do an episode?
I thought of it.
Oh, there's tons.
Yeah. Okay. Well, no. The thing was,
if you're talking about the shorts.
Yeah,
stuff.
I think that's
she
the
specifically was wanted to do The Muppets Carol. Now, what I was thinking was,
you said it wrong.
What? The Muppets Christmas Carol?
Thank you.
It's the same thing.
No.
Stop. I was thinking we could do that and Once Upon, what's it called?
There's Once Upon a Christmas, Twice Upon a Christmas.
Well, we don't have to go that far. We can go once.
There's Disney's House of Mouse one. There's, I know them all.
Mickey's Christmas.
How about we cover in one episode, because they're very familiar stories and we don't have to go that crazy into like plot. If I had to tell you the plot of Christmas Carol, where have you been? You know, so why don't we talk about on a special like Christmas episode? We'll do Muppets and Once Upon what happened? Once Upon a Christmas. That one. We'll do those two.
Do you want to touch on the shorts, because Prep and Landing is becoming like a big thing? Ish.
I mean,
with the band,
we gotta think something. Christmas episode. There has to be. I mean,
which one?
We'll be around next year, right? Like, so there has to be.
That's
more
a good
Christmas
point.
Shows.
There's got to be a second Christmas episode. He's got a good point there.
What we could also
do
is
put all the Christmas eggs in one basket.
Well, I was going to say we could do the the movies you mentioned, but then give everybody some of the other ones to check out that they may not know exist.
Oogity Boogity Boo goes to Christmas time.
You know, a listing of ones to check out.
Yeah.
We could do that too.
All right, well, we'll do that. But we will have a Christmas episode. Is that took a long time to answer. Yes.
Yeah, that was the longest answer.
That was the answer.
You do give Melissa a way to get there.
Yeah. Matt Rankin says, speaking of Pixar, whenever I book a trip to Walt Disney World, I'm reading weird. I'm surprised that the welcome materials/Magic Band boxes they send out feature the Incredibles. Are there, and there is actually very little to do with the Incredibles at the parks.
That dance party, though.
It's got that dance party. With Magic Band 2 coming, what film characters do you think they should switch for such mailings? I was excited to see The Incredibles on anything, I was like, yeah! But yeah, it was sort of like, oh yeah, you guys haven't totally acted like this doesn't exist for the last 10 years. I mean, the Magic Band that we saw a couple of Magic Bands. They were just kind of classic characters. There wasn't anything
specific. But he needs to put on the mailing because you know how it says, like, your incredible journey. I think that's the thing. Like, it's such a phrase. So, like, I'm trying to think of, like, a good...
I mean, I'd love to see Sorcerer Mickey, you know, here, start the magic. The magic starts here, and there's a, you know, Sorcerer Mickey box.
Yeah, I think that's that they'd have to give a new catchphrase. I think you nailed it, Pete. You should send that in. Copyright.
Pay me. It's like Goodfellas. Blah, blah,
I really like the looks of the new bands, by the way.
They're nice, yeah. Well, we'll be wearing them tomorrow, so you'll see them in action.
You son of a...
Yeah, that's right. Limited to 1,300. And I smelled every one of them.
I'll be able to get mine soon because they go enough annual pass holders first, right?
Yeah.
Yes, yes, they are. Brad Kalmason asks, where is the best place to get non-USA Disney Park merchandise? I do not know.
A friend overseas. No.
Yeah, Laura. Maybe Laura Winberg, and I believe would be your answer for that.
You can probably find it on eBay.
I have no idea where to.
Yeah, I guess eBay would be a good source. Yeah. Or if you know somebody, you know, if you ask in the group, are there people, you know, from other countries? There are. And hey, would you mind picking me up this? And you know, PayPal's a thing, and you can always do something like that. I'm sure. I would think that's a way of doing it. Corey Hall asks. Looking at Walt Disney Animation's lineup of Wreck-It Ralph 2 and Gigantic, I'm more excited to see Pixar's Coco, Incredibles 2, Toy Story 4, and even Cars 3. Well, we have to talk to you about that. I'm fairly certain that Pixar will do a great job finishing up these sequels, and I'm thinking Coco will look beautiful and be fantastic. I've never liked the story of Jack and the Beanstalk, so unfortunately, I'm going into that film with that in my mind. Walt Disney Animation will probably blow me away with it, and I'll eat my words when the time comes. All that being said, Walt Disney Animation is at the top for me with recent films, and Pixar has been hit or miss. Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, if you didn't like Jack and the Beanstalk in and of itself, if you haven't seen BFG, I know it's not the same thing, but it has that element.
Has elements.
I think that's a great world to kind of maybe refresh your exposure to it. And, you know.
And that was that came out today on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
You know, in case you wanted to hunt that out, actually. It just came out today. And I highly recommend it. I really love that movie. I'm going to order the 3D import because America. Ed Buskirk says, with so many new experiences headed our way in every park, Pandora, Rivers of Light, Star Wars, Toy Story Land, reimagining Epcot, and the future's future changes going to Future World, Tomorrowland in Magic Kingdom. What are you most looking forward to see? Do you think all these will be in place for the 50th anniversary?
I don't think 4 years from now, Future World. I mean, Tomorrowland will be. I call it Future World.
I don't think Tomorrowland or Epcot will be ready in 4 years. No. I don't see either of those happening.
No, I think Star Wars and Toy Story.
You know, I think they'll be in place definitely by 2021. I would hope a couple of years earlier than that. I think Future World. Well, Future World and Epcot in its in itself, I think that'll still be kind of rolling the ball, so to speak, on that.
We might get some new stuff opening up in there for the 50th, but I don't think it'll be completely done. Because like we talked about with Panda, like there's a lot of empty buildings right now that you could probably start doing some stuff to in the next, you know, 2 or 3 years. But
actually, you know, Ryan, would you like to see them focus on Tomorrowland in order to get it fixed up for the 50th?
You know, if you'd asked me this before they hit the 40th and Fantasyland was, you know, Wall City, I would have said yes. At this point, I'm going to say no. I'm not that worried about Tomorrowland being completely fixed, just because I'd rather have a park together than haphazardly thrown together in time for a celebration. You know, the overarching question, I think there'll be pieces of Epcot that are ready. And I think you'll have some key pieces in place prior to Epcot turning 40 in 2022.
That's a good point. Yeah.
But I don't think that I don't think it'll be totally complete before then either.
I think that's going to be a bit of a longer road. But as you said, I think that it's easier to get pieces done in Epcot without upsetting the whole flow.
Yep.
Because I think most of those changes are going to be coming. It's not going to get in the way of where you're walking. Like when Frozen was under construction. It didn't affect the flow of Epcot at all.
No, and I think they're learning a lesson right now at the studios where people are butting up against walls and having to walk all the way back around, you know, and guest services are getting an earful about how they've shut down half the park. I think that they've kind of taken a lesson from that. And while it's going to be amazing, maybe, yeah, find ways around that that don't impede the guest experience as much.
Yeah.
All right. All right, guys. Thank you so much for your – Brian, did you want to throw anything into that end part, actually? I'm sorry.
No, I mean, Star Wars is if anything is Star Wars is happening, that's the thing I'm most excited for. But I mean, obviously Pandora is coming up real soon, so that's the one.
Yeah, it's
and
so
plus
soon.
I love everything I've seen out of that. But the ultimate thing for me is Star Wars.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm on the same page.
You know what I would love? I want to pose a question to everyone because I already know my answer.
Okay.
But if you could have lunch with any Imagineer in any restaurant, who would you pick and where would you go?
I mean my answer is obvious. Let's go to someone else.
This isn't even
is there any answer other than Joe Rohde?
No,
Joe Rohde at Tiffin's.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's Joe Rohde.
You wouldn't pick anybody else though?
No,
I would have thought you would have picked maybe somebody else. I don't know who.
No, I mean, if John Lasseter is quote unquote an Imagineer, I would pick John Lasseter, but he's not. It would be Joe Rohde.
Okay.
Yeah. Who else would I pick?
I don't know. Like, I know some people love Tony Baxter. Marty Sklar.
No. But Rohde is still shaping the parks that I go to now.
Yeah,
so, I mean, yes, Baxter is incredible. I think he's an awesome speaker. I really do. Marty Sklar is sort of like just, I mean, they should give him a statue at some point somewhere in the parks, I feel. But Rohde has just got... He's got fire in him.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a real fire in him, and he's shaping the parks that I visit right now.
Yeah.
And that's really cool.
Yeah.
So that's unpassable. All right, let's go to the reviews. We got some reviews to read, right?
We do. We have a brand new one.
Hooray!
From Jim Meek 55. Excellent, he says. I listen to a lot of Disney podcasts, 20 to 30. Oh, my goodness.
What?
Per week. I don't even have time to listen to 5 podcasts
man,
a week.
Man, man.
You are awesome. Where am I? blah, blah, blah. Per week. Having started with Lou Mangiello's wonderful WDW radio podcast, using that as a kind of gold standard, it is difficult sometimes to find a show that balances the camaraderie between hosts and guests and providing great information. Show number 67 is a shining example of how to do it right. Listening to as many shows as I do, I had a lot of recaps of the Destination D's event highlights, but this show gave me a true feel of what it was like to attend the event as well. Great audio quality, listenable voices, and insight make the Disney Magic Hour Extended Edition nice. a must subscribe for Disney enthusiasts. An hour would just not be long enough. Keep up the good work, Jim Meeker. Thank you.
Wow, thank you, man. That's an amazing review. Wow, thank you so much. And we said the other three last week would Panda. We did?
Yes.
We did?
Well, no, on the Moana.
No, you
radio.
Did it during the Moana.
That's right. Yeah. So many recordings. All right, guys.
Yeah, but
that
me and Ryan. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
That's right.
Get stuff done.
Everyone traveling. It's because we were on the beach when we saw it.
Yeah, no. You know what? Honestly,
I got a hard cold.
I'm kind of glad that you guys did Moana because I didn't have a chance to see it yet. I'm going to have to wait till I get back from Disney to see it.
That's funny.
So I was like, I'm going to really have to squeeze this in because I thought we were going to do it. But then you guys saw it early. So I'm like, okay, good. I can wait then.
Boom. All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us yet again this week. Absolutely had a blast. I thought this was a lot of fun. I'm happy that we got to talk about this. And I am currently working on a Marvel article as my next thing. Oh, I guess I should get into that very, very briefly. Yeah, no, I'm working on a Marvel thing right now because we are almost done with Luke Cage. And some things have come up, a lot of positives, some things that I'm kind of scratching my head about. And there are pitfalls that I think the movies fall into. And there are some that I think the TV shows fall into. And I want to kind of tackle those because they're not the same. And I think that's fascinating.
I'm going to attempt to have a homecoming Melissa and the Mouse review at some point.
Excellent. In other news, just so everyone is aware, for those of you who are not aware, this was not the first podcast that I ever did or that Brian ever did. The very first one that we ever did was about 2 years ago, well, a little less than 2 years ago, called The Film Basement. The Film Basement was the first thing that I ever really like create. Well, outside of like films and stuff that I've done, it was, you know, the first thing that like we created. And when I moved, there was a certain energy to everyone in the same room for that thing. It was me, Brian, and my close friend, Kevin. And there was an energy because we were all in the same room, and it was great. It was honestly, I thought it was magic. I really loved it. But when I moved, doing that over Skype, it lost a bit of that. So I decided I'm going to step away from the film basement, which I did not want to, like, you know, on a personal level. I didn't want to, but I thought it was a smarter idea. And, you know, this other crew, you know, the Volume 2 crew led by Kevin and Chris are going to take it. And they were going to, you know, run the show for there on out. They've been doing that for about, I don't know, I want to say like 4 or 5 months, somewhere around that area.
Yeah, since we moved in June.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe from
yeah.
July or something.
So, well, the thing is that crew has a very, very specific way of doing that show. It is not the show that we used to do. And for better or worse, the film basement has a certain a thing that people want from it or don't want from it or whatever. And the guys have decided that they want to just start their totally own thing on their own website and just basically take what they've learned from the film basement, put it all towards their new show, and it's theirs wholly. It's not something that they took over and, you know, in this weird thing. And I thought it was a great idea. And I'm very, very happy for them. I think they got a great name. Film on Tap, I think it's a great name. Mm-hmm. And it also sort of afforded me the luxury of taking that show back. Ever since I moved out to Florida, I missed doing a film show. And I, you know, film is my first love. Even well before Disney became something that mattered to me in my life, film has always been the thing that mattered to me in my life. And I'm going to relaunch that show as a solo show with guests every now and then, probably a lot, I hope. And it will be family friendly. I mean, I may have like an AMC level of a swear here and there. I don't really know, but it's going to be a family friendly thing. And I'm going to just be talking about movies that interest me that week or something that I caught on in a theater or a Criterion film that came out. And I would love more people to know about all that kind of stuff. We're going to talk about the fiasco that is 4K and how confusing it is for a common everyday person going into Best Buy right now and buying a television and whether or not it's worth your dollars. We're going to be talking about the overall impact that a film, say, of Rogue One will have on future films of Star Wars, because this is the first film that doesn't seem like other Star Wars films from a visual standpoint. So that's the kind of stuff that we're going to dive into. And I might have an episode this month, but I will be going, you know, into it more in January. So the previous Volume 2 episodes will actually be deleted from our current feed over at Film Basement. They're going to be shifted over to the new guys thing. So you will still be able to kind of take a listen to the older episodes with me, Brian, and Kevin. And also Chris and Jim, you know, they were on there for a number of months before I moved. But it's going to just sort of be my little side project that I get to visit whenever I have time from here on out. And I'm really happy. I missed that show. I missed talking about that stuff. And it's just something that I have a lot to talk about and I have a lot to say. And I'm looking forward to sharing it with everyone. And I hope that you listen. So more on that when it comes up. But till then, this episode of Disney Magic Hour, it's brought to you by MEI Travel. Head on over there right now, guys. Take a vacation. We are. It's weird, but our vacation is literally 30 minutes from our house now. But don't worry about it. It makes it easier. But if you're not 30 minutes from your vacation, or if you are, head on over to meitravel.com. Becky and her team is going to take care of you. They're going to customize your trip for you. They're going to get it exactly the way you want it. And they do it at no additional charge. I mean, what do you want, guys? Come on. Get on there. Also, let them know we sent you over there, because that helps. And right now, you are listening to Upular. You can find this track and more over at soundcloud.com/pogomix, pogomix.net. Look for Nick to pop on, maybe in one of the early episodes when I relaunch Film Basement, as a matter of fact, as he is a 4K joiner-upper, as I was. Who are we, though? We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at DisMagicHourPod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. Over on Facebook, Disney Magic Hour is our group. We're on iTunes. We're on Google Music Play. If you leave a 5-star review over on iTunes, Melissa will read the review at the end of the show, as she did today. And you can find all of our episodes across your platforms, soundcloud.com/DisneyMagicHour. Melissa also is in charge of the Instagram, where you can find at
Disney Magic Hour Podcast.
And even above that so much, Ryan Wilson, where can everyone find everything that you do over at the Main Street Gazette?
So Main Street Gazette, the main site is mainstgazette.com, Main ST Gazette, Instagram, and Twitter. If you search the same thing on Facebook, you'll find me there.
Excellent. I'm so happy to have you back here. We missed you.
Yes,
it's really good. The gang got back together, so I'm very, very happy. Brian, we'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, that's so weird.
It's so weird.
I'll see you tomorrow. Everyone will listen to this while we're hanging out. So
Yeah.
And stay tuned, I guess, to the group. We'll do some live stuff maybe.
Yeah, we'll be doing some live stuff. So I'm going to have this up by the end of the night. So when you're reading this, when you're hearing this, you know, we'll be walking around the parks and whatnot. And until next week, say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Brian.
Goodnight, Brian.
Say goodnight, Ryan.
Goodnight, Ryan.
Goodnight, Pete. And say goodnight, Pogo.
That doesn't even rhyme.
Yeah, it does.
Bring it back, another mic.
Both out of those.
Everybody up.
The would you sign off?
Turn mic up, another mic.
Both out of those.
Let me in.
Not so rock, a weird. Bring it back, another mic.
Both out of those.
Everybody up.
The would you sign off?
Turn mic up, another mic.
Both out of those.
Let me in.
Not so rock, a weird. Bring it back, another mic.
Both out of those.